She was born September 13th, 1904, in Atlanta, Georgia. She was named Alberta Christine Williams. She would be an only child. Her father was the Reverend Adam Daniel Williams, or A.D., the preacher at Ebenezer Baptist Church. Alberta lived a relatively normal life for the time and age. She went to church faithfully and learned to play the piano. As Alberta was nearing her last days in high school, her parents started to board a girl at their house whose name was Woody. Woody's brother was named Michael. Even if it was something just in their minds, some sort of attraction was shared between Michael and Alberta. Yet college was calling, and Alberta left the state to attend school. Not long after, at the young age of 20, Alberta earned a teaching degree from what is now Hampton University in Hampton, Virginia. Upon graduating, Alberta and Michael began courting. They were married on Thanksgiving Day, 1926. Alberta was 22 years old. They were married in her father's Ebenezer Church. Encouraged by his new father-in-law, A.D., Michael began his schooling and ministry in the same year. Alberta was raised by a preacher and now married to one in training. Within 4 short years, the newlyweds had 3 children: the oldest daughter, Willie, middle son, Michael Jr., and youngest son, Alfred. But shortly after Alberta gave her father 3 grandchildren, he died on March 21, 1931. Because of this, Alberta's husband and Green minister became the new pastor of the Ebenezer Baptist Church in March of the same year. Within a relatively short time, in 1934, Michael was one of 10 Baptist ministers who, after being able to visit the Holy Land, traveled to Germany. That was the same year the president of Germany, Heidenberg, would die. Hitler would then assume centralized power of the German people, becoming the Führer, being both chancellor and president. Despite the present mess that Germany found itself in, Michael was mesmerized by the country's religious history. Undoubtedly, Martin Luther. Seeing the sites where Protestantism was birthed had a profound impact on the young minister, and upon arriving home in Atlanta, Michael King changed his name to Martin Luther King. He then changed his middle child's name from Michael to Martin Luther King Jr. The boy was 5 years old at the time. During all of this, Alberta remained a close and caring mother to all her children. Martin Jr. would later write that she was behind the scenes setting forth those motherly cares, the lack of which leaves a missing link in life. While Alberta was in the midst of raising her family, her own mother died in 1941 of a heart attack. During these years, Alberta served in the church she was raised in, becoming president of the Ebenezer Women's Committee from 1950 to 1962. Besides this, Alberta's talent in music was put to use as director and organist of the church choir. By this time, her husband had become a mature preacher and civil rights activist, becoming the head of the NAACP, and her middle son was following close in his steps. Martin Jr. graduated with a doctorate in systematic theology from Boston University in 1955. Both father and son were now serving as Ebenezer's preaching ministers. Martin Jr. had become prominent enough that the FBI under Hoover began monitoring him by the end of the same year. But as Luther became more of a figurehead in both Christian and political activity, Alberta found the joy of her son's success mixed with real fear. Martin Luther Jr. was arrested on numerous occasions and went to jail 29 times, sometimes months at a time. His determination to see a part of God's kingdom arrive here on earth by people not judging others based on their color of their skin, but on their character, was gaining more support from all people. Luther's nonviolence demonstrations, influenced greatly by Mahatma Gandhi, was beginning to make their point, and people, black and white, were being won over. But not without great cost. The political landscape at the time was ripe with upheaval and at times violence. Just 4 months after Martin's I Have a Dream speech in Washington, the President of the United States was assassinated on November 22, 1963 in Dallas, Texas. The nation mourned. If the leader of the country was not properly protected, what chance did a black civil rights leader have of being safeguarded? Little did Alberta know, and although it wasn't too personal, JFK's assassination was just the beginning of deaths that she would soon face. Her fears increased when on February 21, 1965, Malcolm X was murdered by Nation of Islam radicals. No one, black or white, was safe from anyone. As her son Martin became more prominent and spoke out against the Vietnam War, the FBI strengthened its surveillance on Luther, concerned that he was influenced by communist, black nationalists, or both. Whether Luther was aware or not of the FBI's work, he continued his. In April of 1968, he traveled to Memphis in support of the local sanitation workers' union. On April 3rd, he gave a speech with some words seeming to foreshadow his death. Luther proclaimed,
"I have seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. And I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord."
The following day, just after 6 p.m., standing on the balcony outside his room at the Lorraine Motel, Martin Luther King Jr. was struck in the neck by an assassin's bullet. His brother Alfred was staying in the room beneath him. Surrounded by friends and associates, he was pronounced dead an hour later. It was April 4th, 1968, and he was 39 years old. In an instant, all of Alberta's fears had materialized. Despite her prayers and her faith in God, her son was taken from the country, but more painfully, taken from her. She was 64. God seemed to have lost control. The nation was out of control. Only 2 months after her son was killed, presidential hopeful and friend of the king's, Robert F. Kennedy, was shot and killed while giving a speech in Los Angeles, California. Things just could not have been worse. While the pain of losing her son was still acute, Alberta took comfort in her daughter Millie, her husband Martin, and her son Alfred Daniel. The father and son were still pastoring together at her dad's old Ebenezer Baptist Church. But then, On July 21st, 1969, just 14 months after Martin's death, the unthinkable happened. Alberta's youngest child and last son, Alfred Daniel King, was found drowned in his own pool. His death was ruled as accidental. And while Alfred was obviously depressed from his brother's death and at times struggled with alcohol, he was a good swimmer. Not to allude that the cause of his drowning was unimportant, Alfred was nonetheless gone, and Alberta had now lost both of her cherished boys. Although slowly, time crept forward. And despite all the chaos swirling around Alberta, a constant and solace in her life was her church and her ministry there. She was raised at the Ebenezer Baptist Church and married there. It was her father's church, had been her son's church, and now continued to be her husband's church, but in reality, it was her church. Only 5 years had passed since losing Alfred, six for Martin, but the 69-year-old found herself comfortable as she played her familiar pipe organ on a Sunday morning. She was at peace leading the church choir and playing the organ. In more ways than one, it was her sanctuary. As she played, a young, short black man, new to the church, entered, joining the 400 others in attendance. He was 23 years old, but looked much younger. He had a wide and large head with an abnormally long distance between his eyes that sat behind tinted eyeglasses. The innocent-looking young man, whose name was Marcus, found a seat in the front row as Alberta was playing the Lord's Prayer. He had hoped to sit closer to Martin Luther Sr., but was unable. Shortly after sitting down, Marcus drew two pistols from his clothing and started to fire at those closest to him, namely the elderly woman playing the organ. The beautiful sound of the pipes were definitely silenced by gunfire. Alberta King was shot and killed on that Sunday morning, June 30th, 1974, by Marcus Wayne Chetnault, a mentally ill black Hebrew Israelite. Alberta died on the floor of the church that she was raised in, that she was married in, and that she faithfully served in. She died less than 100 yards away from her son Martin's final resting place across the street. Any sadness and despair that Alberta might have carried at the time was now gone. She met her Maker that she long served and committed herself to. She joined the heavenly family of God, of saints from eternity past. But no reunion was as sweet as that which she shared with her two sons. Years after her death, Ebenezer Baptist Church dedicated its new pipe organ in honor of Alberta's lifelong love of music and worship. I wanted to share the story with you for a few reasons. One, because simply put, not too many people know the details of tragedy that surrounded the King family. The story of Martin Luther is much bigger than just him. And the more that we know about any story makes us appreciate it more. Secondly, as we honor Martin Luther King Jr. this upcoming Monday, which is January 20th, we need to remember that great men are usually so because of their mothers. And real mothers inherently bear much of their children's joys and pains. So as we celebrate MLK, we should also celebrate his mother. Thirdly, as we as we know these things, as we know the backdrop, as we know more about the story, as we see the life of Alberta and the continual loss that surrounded her, we are moved to ask, where was God? Where was God? And when we ask where God was, what we're really asking is why God allows bad or evil things to occur in our lives, or in this case, Alberta King's life. And that's a good and normal question to ask. We wouldn't even be human if we didn't ask that question. In the Gospel of Matthew and Mark, we read that Jesus himself, the very Son of God, when he was hanging on the cross, he asked his Father, my God, why have you forsaken me? And so we can discuss the plan that evil and tragedy plays in God's economy at a later time. We can do a whole podcast or podcasts on that. And I don't want to dismiss it, because it is a very real and important question that we all share. But I don't want to ask or really dwell on it now, because the real easy answer is that when we ask where is God, the answer is that he is where he has been. He's seated. Jesus is seated at the right hand of God. He's on the throne. He's in control. He is not distant. He's not unknowing. But there's a better and more applicable question that I think we should ask, and it's not where was God in all of this, but where was Alberta? How did she handle everything? How did she respond to these tragedies? I can't, nor anyone can really tell what was in Alberta's heart, but if outward actions indicate or reflect what is on the inside, then I think we can gather some insight. The question is, where was Alberta? The answer is where she always was: serving God, trusting in him, resting in him. She was with his people. She was with her lifelong friends. Despite the highs and lows and the ups and downs of her life, Alberta remained faithful. Where was God then? Where is God now? Where are you? Where are you now? See, it requires little to no faith to trust in God when everything is well. But when God throws us a curveball, we come face to face with ourself and with the question, do we still believe that God is in control? Do we still believe that God is good? Do we still believe that he loves us, has a plan for us, and he understands what is going on? That requires faith. Job is a character in the Old Testament who's kind of famous because of what God put him through. He tested Job. But in reality, Job is just like all of us, in that we are all tested. In our life, we are all, at different times in various ways, we're tested to the point where we have to really ask, do we trust him? And Job is special not because of what he went through, although it was really, really difficult to say the least. He lost his family. He lost his wealth. He lost his health. He had pretty much lost everything. And that can happen to a lot of us. It has happened to a lot of us. It probably will happen to you to some degree in the future. But what makes Job stand out is not what happened to him, but where he landed in the midst of it. And so Job chapter 13 verse 15, he says, though he slay me, yet I will trust him. I know that I've had to say that in my own life. Though he slay me, yet I will trust him. Job landed there. Alberta landed there. God's desire is that we land there, that we acknowledge that he's in control. We acknowledge that his ways are higher than our ways. We go to him with our pain and our suffering, or we cast our burden down at his feet. But at the end of the day, we trust him. So as we remember Martin Luther King this week, let us remember his mother as well. Remember her life. Remember her loss. Remember her faith in God. Remember her name, Alberta. Hey, thanks for listening. I hope you found this podcast to be engaging, encouraging, and enlightening. That's the point of this podcast. So if you were engaged, encouraged, or enlightened on any level, I'd really appreciate it if you share this podcast, tell someone about it. That would be great. I know you probably think I have probably 3 million followers, but in actuality, I just have two. Not 2 million, just two. My mom and some rando in Nigeria, which I'm really grateful for you both. So let's start to get more mothers listening to the show, and let's just win over the whole country of Nigeria. That would be great. We'll continue next week with episode 3 of 5 from our study in foundational faith. Looking forward to it. Until then, take care.